These are the 12 qualities of a perfect Brahmana. Following religious principles, speaking truthfully, controlling the senses by undergoing austerities and penances, being free from jealousy, being intelligent, being tolerant, creating no enemies, performing yajna, giving charity, being steady, being well versed in Vedic study, and observing vows. Aravindanabha. Lord Vishnu, who has a lotus growing from his navel. Pada Aravinda. To the lotus feet of the Lord. Vimukhat.
Not interested in devotional service.
Shvapacham.
One born in a low family.
Or a dog eater.
Varishtham.
More glorious.
Manye.
I consider.
Tat arpita.
Surrendered unto the lotus feet of the Lord.
Manaha.
His mind.
Vachana.
Words.
Ihita.
Every endeavor.
Artha.
Wealth.
Pranam.
And life.
Punati.
Purifies.
Saha.
He.
The devotee.
Kulam.
His family.
Na.
Not.
Tu.
But.
Bhurimanaha.
One who falsely thinks himself to be in a prestigious position.
Translation. If a Brahmana has all 12 of the Brahminical qualifications, as they are stated in the book called Sanat Sujata. You don't have the Telugu book there to read from? That would make it a lot easier for you. It's quite a long purport. You can get the Telugu Bhagavatam.
If a Brahmana has all 12 of the Brahminical qualifications, but is not a devotee, and is averse to the lotus feet of the Lord, he is certainly lower than a devotee who is a dog eater. That we understand as being born in the family of dog eaters, because devotees don't eat dogs. But who has dedicated everything, mind, words, activities, wealth, and life, to the Supreme Lord. Such a devotee is better than a Brahmana because the devotee can purify his whole family, whereas the so-called Brahmana, in a position of false prestige, cannot purify even himself. Regarding the devotee purifying his family, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur commented that a neophyte devotee purifies 3 generations of his family. A Madhyamadhikari purifies 14 generations, and an Uttam Bhagavat purifies 100 generations. All right. So, we'll start reading the purport now. Here is a statement by Prahlada Maharaj, one of the 12 authorities, regarding the distinction between a devotee and a Brahmana expert in Karma Kanda or Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. There are 4 varnas and 4 ashrams which divide human society, but the central principle is to become a first-class pure devotee. It is said in the Hari Bhakti Sudhodaya, Bhagavad Bhakti Hinasya Jati Shastrang Japastapaha Apranasyaiva Dehasya Mandanang Lokaranjanam. If one is born in a high family like that of a Brahmana, Kshatriya, or Vaishya, but is not a devotee of the Lord, all his good qualifications as a Brahmana, Kshatriya, or Vaishya are null and void. Indeed, they are considered decorations of a dead body. In this verse, Prahlad Maharaj speaks of the Vipras, the learned Brahmanas. The learned Brahmana is considered best among the divisions of Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra. But a devotee born in a low Chandala family is better than such Brahmanas, not to speak of the Kshatriyas, Vaishyas and others. A devotee is better than anyone, for he is in the transcendental position on the Brahman platform. Mangcha yovya bhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. One who engages in full devotional service, who does not fall down in any circumstance, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman. The 12 qualities of a first-class Brahmana are stated in the book called Sanat Sujata, which as far as I remember is part of the Mahabharata, are as follows. Jnanam cha satyam cha dhammah shrutam cha hyamat saryam hris titikshanusuya yagyas cha dhanam cha dhriti shamascha mahavrata dvadasha brahmanasya. Dvadasha Brahmanasya, the 12 of a Brahman. The 12 what is not stated particularly in this verse, means the 12 qualities. So you can understand them. Jnanam, Satyam, Dhamma, that means Indriya Nigraha, controlling. Shrutam, learning. Amatsarya, non-envy. Hri, modesty. Titiksha, tolerance of various conditions. Anasuya, non-envy. Yagya, danam, dhriti, shama, control of the mind or peacefulness. Mahavrata, following great vows. So, continuing Srila Prabhupada's purport. The European and American devotees in the Krishna consciousness movement are sometimes accepted as Brahmanas, but the so-called caste Brahmanas are very much envious of them. In answer to such envy, Prahlad Maharaj says that one who has been born in a Brahmana family but is falsely proud of his prestigious position cannot even purify himself, not to speak of his family. Whereas if a Chandala, a low-born person, is a devotee and has fully surrendered unto the lotus feet of the Lord, he can purify his entire family. We have had actual experience of how Americans and Europeans, because of their full Krishna consciousness, have purified their whole families. So much so that a mother of a devotee at the time of her death inquired about Krishna with her last breath. This is from Srila Prabhupada's composing. This must have been 1976. So just at the time, just before he was composing this purport, he got news that the mother of one of his devotees in America, just when she died, she asked about Krishna. So that became immortalized in this Bhaktivedanta purport. Therefore, it is theoretically true and has been practically proven that a devotee can give the best service to his family, his community, his society and his nation. The foolish accuse a devotee of following the principle of escapism, but actually the fact is that a devotee is the right person to elevate his family. A devotee engages everything in the service of the Lord, and therefore he is always exalted. Continuing the discussion of how bhakti, devotional service to Krishna, is independent in the sense that it does not depend on any material qualification in order to attain to putti. There are many verses stressing this point in Bhagavatam and elsewhere. This is one of them, spoken by Prahlad Maharaj, who quite unexpectedly was a great devotee, because it wasn't expected that a son of Hiranyakashipu would be a great devotee. It was expected he'd be a great demon, but he became a great devotee. So that bhakti is independent of jati, shastra, japastapa. This is mentioned in this verse, Bhagavad Bhakti Hinasya, that's quoted in the purport. One doesn't have to have any particular practices or whatever, or qualities to take to bhakti. It descends upon the devotee. Not that one can attain it by any personal means. So bhakti is independent means. Also that bhakti is supreme among all processes of elevation. Karma, jnana, yoga, bhakti, these are generally considered the four subjects of Bhagavad Gita. Bhakti is supreme because the others are dependent upon, well, they also ultimately depend on the mercy of higher authorities, but it also depends upon many material conditions to perform them, to even begin to perform them, and to attain perfection in them, whereas that's not the case in bhakti. And some bhakti is required to attain success in karma, jnana and yoga. Whereas in bhakti, it may be performed in any time, place or circumstance, pure devotional service. It doesn't depend on any conditions. Of course, there are conditions that are favorable for it, but one who's actually a pure devotee can perform devotional service in any condition, which means that bhakti is supreme. It's the supreme process. The what can be attained by karma, jnana and yoga is also insignificant compared to what can be attained by bhakti. People in Maya think that by performing karma we will get a result, and they become very enthusiastic to attain that result. But the result is of no actual benefit to them whatsoever. Where even after much endeavor, they may have that karma siddhi. Whereas in bhakti, even a little endeavor, one may not achieve the full result, but even a little bit of bhakti is worth unlimited amounts of karma. Now, throughout the shastra, when it's discussed in the bhakti shastras, when it's discussed about the futility of karma, jnana and yoga, that refers to specific methods, Vedic methods of upliftment. Not upliftment to Krishna consciousness, but improving one's material position, which is something like someone who's being beaten by iron rods, improving his position so that he can get beaten by golden rods. Still one has to suffer. So nowadays the karma kanda and jnana kanda, the traditional Vedic process, that doesn't apply. But still the idea is that by work in this world, one can achieve all that is desirable, that one should do. So karma in this world, the idea, work hard, make money, be a success. What is all this bhakti, useless waste of time? Perform pious activities, feed the poor, open schools and hospitals. So this falls under karma. It's the same idea that by performing activities in this world, we can become good and happy and gather the idea that by studying so many things, we shall understand everything. So the way that karma and jnana go on in the present age is not exactly according to the Vedic method that's being described here in Srimad Bhagavatam, but it's the same basic attitude. Kangshantam karmanam siddhi. People desire success in karma. And in the Vedic process, yajanta iha devataha, they worship the demigods to do so. So it's a little different. There are different ways of attaining karma siddhi. But karma siddhi, it's... there is perfection in karma, in that one can go to the heavenly planets, but to a sane person, it doesn't make any sense. You can call it siddhi. Yeah, I achieved the goal of my life. It's like, again, the example, someone, the goal of my life is, it is instead of being beaten with iron rods, I'll be beaten with golden rods. It makes no sense. One still has to suffer. It may be more prestigious to be beaten by golden rods, but it still hurts. So there are various points which arise in the discussion of this topic, which is why we're going on with it now for the third day, is it, or fourth day? One point that could arise is that Krishna himself states in Bhagavad Gita, Yeshang Tvantagatang Papam Jananam Punya Karmanam Tedvanva Moha Nirmukta Bhajante Mandradavrataha. He says that persons who have ceased to have sinful acts and to have free from all sinful reactions, and who have performed pious activities, and who are free from the dualities of delusion, thinking in terms of this is mine, that is yours, this is my friend, this is my enemy, this is good for my material progress, this is an obstacle. One who has arisen above such dualities, people who have all these qualifications, can engage in my devotional service with a vow, a firm vow, Krishna says. Such persons are described elsewhere in Gita as Mahatmas. Mahatmanas tumang partha daivin prakriti mashritaha bhajanti ananyamanaso gyatva bhutadima vyayam satatam kirtayantamang yatantascha duravrataha. The same term comes again, duravrata. Persons who are actual Mahatmas, they engage in the service of Krishna with a firm vow, a firm determination to do so. So Krishna says that one who has engaged in pious activities and they're free from sinful results, sinful activities, and who are free from the duality of they can perform devotional service with great firmness. Now again, regarding qualifications for bhakti, there's a statement from Narottam Das's Prema Bhakti Chandrika. Govinda bimuk jane svarti nahe hena dhane lokik karya shab jane. Hena dhan, he means the wealth of devotional service. People who are averse to Govinda, they do not attain the wealth of devotional service because they consider it to be mundane. So there is some qualification for devotional service, especially to attain the full bliss, the highest level. Krishna bhakti rasa bhavitamati. Kriyatang yadi katopi labhyate. Tatra lolyam api mulyam ekalam. Janma koti sukritarina labhyate. To attain the Krishna bhakti rasa bhavitamati, which Srila Prabhupada translates as Krishna consciousness, Krishna bhavana. Krishna consciousness. It is required that one has lolyam, or an intense desire to attain it. But this is not a material qualification. This is a spiritual qualification. The difference between a material qualification and a spiritual qualification is that a material qualification arises from material consciousness, from the illusion of thinking, I am this body, or even from the illusion of thinking that I am spiritual, aham brahmasmi, but not accepting that I am an eternal servant of Krishna. Ami siddha Krishna das. E kotha bhule, mayar nafar hoya chirodin bhule. This is from the Prema Vivarta of Jagadananda Pandit. It's a very important instruction. Forgetting that I am in my constitutional position a servant of Krishna, one becomes a servant of Maya, and therefore Chiradin just always wanders around this material world. So in material consciousness, one thinks that I am this body and I am to enjoy it, or I am not anything of this world, I have to get out of it. But in either case, there's no connection with Krishna. So the idea of enjoying this world means that, well, one has to become qualified, work hard, get money, become a success. You've all heard this before. I'm not preaching it. I'm parroting it. I don't believe in it. But you've heard it many times because it's endemic in Indian life today. The idea, work hard, get money, enjoy yourself. Get ahead. Be a success. So to do that, one has to be qualified, go to the college, work hard, study, get a degree. What is your qualification? People often ask us, what is your educational qualification? What is your personal data, something like that? Biodata. They want to see, what have you done? What have you done with your life? What is your experience? What are your qualifications? So these qualifications, they may be required for getting some material position, but they're not any spiritual position. There is a spiritual qualification that someone who's in Maya, who hears about Krishna, if they desire to attain Krishna, that is their spiritual qualification. That is the awakening of their spiritual consciousness. Spiritual consciousness means to identify oneself as a servant of Krishna. So a spiritual qualification is the desire to attain that position. So there's no material qualification for coming to Krishna consciousness, but there is the spiritual qualification. Still, bhakti is independent. She's not obliged to bestow herself upon anyone, but she is inclined to bestow herself upon those who want her. So one disqualification for bhakti is to have no interest in it. And the qualification to have interest in it, that outweighs all other qualifications such as Viprad Vishadaguna Yuta Aravindanava Pada Aravinda Vimukat. To be not interested in Krishna consciousness, even if one has all very good qualities. Following religious principles, speaking truthfully, controlling the senses by undergoing austerities and penances, being free from jealousy, being intelligent, being tolerant, creating no enemies, performing yajna, giving charity, being steady, being well-versed in Vedic study, and observing vows. Where do you find anyone nowadays like that, or even any so pious? If we were to find such a person, we'd say you're less than a dog eater. Not every dog eater, but a dog eater who is Krishna devotee. Krishna devotees don't eat dogs, but if someone is born in a family in which they're accustomed to eating dogs, but he takes up Krishna consciousness, his position becomes more glorious. Now, again, it's expected that someone who has these, who is somewhat purified, it's expected that they'll take to devotional service, as we have the Manghi Partavya Pashracha Yepi Suf Papa Yoneha Striyo Vaishastha Tashu Das Tepi Anti Parangatim. King Puna Brahmana Punya Bhaktara Jarshayastata Anityama Sukham Lokam Imam Prapya Pajasvamam. Krishna says, anyone who takes shelter in me, even though they be of sinful birth, and he mentions Vaishyas, Shudras and women, if they take shelter in me, they can attain me. Then what to speak of the pious Brahmanas and the devotional Kshatriyas who in this miserable world of temporality worship me? So they're more expected to do so. They're more expected to be devotees. They understand this world is miserable and temporary. So they may take to bhakti on this platform. Chaturvidha bhajante mam janasukriti narjuna artho jignyasur artharti jnani cha bharatarshava. Four basic types of sukriti, pious people take to my devotional service, Krishna says. Those who are distressed, desirous of wealth, inquisitive, and in knowledge of Krishna. So the Brahmanas and Kshatriyas, they have training in Vedic knowledge, Brahmanas to a very great extent, and Kshatriyas to some extent. And Kshatriyas, they're meant for practically applying the Vedic teachings in society. And Brahmanas, they give the proper, full philosophical backup knowledge. So they see the nature of this world as miserable, and therefore they can surrender to Krishna. Whereas someone who approaches Krishna, I'm distressed, oh Krishna, please help me, remove my distress. Srila Prabhupada told a story. There was a woman going in the forest. There are not many forests these days, but still you see people, they find the twigs that have fallen on the ground, gather them up, make a bundle, even out at that farm. You see they do it there? People come around, they gather up twigs, make a bundle and put it on their head, and you can see they're walking along and they can just about hold it because it's so heavy. They have little, usually these people, they're not very well nourished, so they have thin, I'm sure you see it in Nepal. People go like that in the hills, they gather firewood and they're walking along with this very heavy weight. So Srila Prabhupada, he told the story, a woman had gone to the forest and collected so much firewood. It was on her head, somehow it fell down. And she called out, oh, Govinda! Because she was, to get it back up on her head is very difficult. She was, her arms are already so tight. Govinda, Govinda, she called. So Govinda came and said, yes, what do you want? Oh, Govinda! Please put this firewood back on my head. It's a case of artha, someone who's distressed, but they don't know what to pray for. They may think, well, that was stupid. She should have asked Govinda to manifest a servant to carry it on his head. Or she should have asked Govinda to give her lots of money, and then she wouldn't have to gather firewood ever again. It's foolish. We read just about the foolish person who performs Krishna for some material benefit, but Krishna gradually brings them in to a proper understanding and makes them his actual devotee. So people who are already aware that this world is temporary and miserable, they will take to Krishna's devotional service with the proper motive. They're more likely to do so with the motive simply to serve Krishna. Now, we're in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's sampradaya, so fortunately for us, we are being directed toward Krishna prema, following in the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan, who serve Krishna only for his pleasure. And they take pleasure in doing so. They don't think about their own pleasure, but by not thinking about their pleasure and just serving the reservoir of pleasure, Krishna, they become most happy. Whereas most Vaishnava sampradayas, glorious as they are, their aim is mukti, the idea we'll get out of this world and go to the spiritual world and serve Krishna and be happy like that. But they actually stress on mukti. Whereas Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he stresses on mama janmani janmani ishvare bhavatad bhaktira haitu kitvai, service, not even asking for liberation from this world. So he stresses on bhakti as the means and the end. Whereas in some sampradayas, bhakti is seen as a means to attain sharanagati. It's we may say it's semantics, just different. Yeah, it's a different use of words. They understand the words differently. They take bhakti to be a means. But the means is sharanagati, to take shelter of Krishna. And when you take shelter of Krishna, mame kam sharanam raja ahang tuang sarva pabhebyo moksha yashami, Krishna delivers us from these material conditions. Now, there is the Vedic process that one takes to the Vedic process as a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shura, follows the Varnashram Dharma system. And the idea is that by following this, one can become gradually purified. And gradually one can come to the highest platform. The idea is that by performing Vedic karmas, one indirectly worships Vishnu. By performing yajñas, one indirectly worships Vishnu. By performing fruitive activities like this, one can gradually come to the platform of understanding what is the use of all this. Simply, gata gatam kama kama labhante, going up and up to the heavenly planets, coming down, going up, going down, going up, going down, going up, going up. And then one desires to become liberated from this world, and comes to, from karma comes jnana. and then eventually from jnana, bahunam janmanam ante jnanavang mang prapadyate. So it's a long process. That, and even to come to the platform, even after many, many lifetimes, to come to the platform of understanding that I am meant to serve Krishna, at some point one has to get information from a pure devotee. One has to be favored by the pure devotees. Rahuganai tattapasana yati na chejaya ya nivapanadva. That we read yesterday. Vina mahat seva, vina mahat padarajo bishekam. One cannot attain to the position that Jadvarat has attained without being smeared by the dust of the lotus feet of a great personality, pure devotee. So that's the vital principle. Generally, someone who is pious is more ready to accept this. As we see, people in India in general, in Hindu families, are more inclined to take to devotional service that we're preaching all over the world than people from other backgrounds. So we can say that even today, birth in a Hindu family is pious. It's bhakti unmukhi. It's as much as people have an inclination toward Krishna, that is their piety from a previous life. And thus we find that even in different parts of India and among different communities, people take this up more readily. In Bengal, I'm not at all undermining the great efforts of the devotees who've been preaching Krishna consciousness very widely there. But many people take to Krishna consciousness. One factor is that they're predisposed to it, because people in Bengal, they know about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and many of them are, by their family background, Vaishnava followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They may not have proper knowledge or practice, but you'll find in their house pictures of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Gaur Nitai, like this. One devotee told me he had met a communist in West Bengal, which isn't so unusual. It's becoming more unusual, thankfully. For many years, the Bam Front, as they were called, was ruling the West Bengal State Assembly. So he met a communist who said, well, I'm an atheist. You're supposed to be an atheist if you're a communist. But he said, but still, I like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was the first communist. You see, he didn't distinguish between the high class and the low class. So he took him to be the first. For him, the highest perfection of life was to be a communist. And so he praised Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as being a communist. So somehow or other, in some way or other, even though he was an atheist, he couldn't reject Nimai Pandit, as he's often known in Bengal. Nimai. They know him more as Nimai, or Gauranga, or Gohari. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that's for after he took sannyas. He left Bengal after that. So they know him more by that name. Of course, they know the name Sri Chaitanya also. So some piety is there. There are different kinds of piety. There is karmonmukh sukriti. It's called sukriti. Then there is bhoganmukhi. The kind of piety which leads one to enjoy this material world. That's generally what people think of as piety. There's mokshanmukhi sukriti. Pious activities which help one to become liberated from this material world. And there's bhaktionmukhi sukriti. Pious activities which help one to attain to pure devotional service. Now, the piety that helps one to attain to pure devotional service, it's in connection with bhakti. It's on a different level to that of karma, performing social welfare activities such as kshatriyas can do, making roads, putting shade trees on the roads, digging ponds so people can have water for bathing and for cooking and for irrigating the fields. These are all pious activities because they help people on the material sphere. Of course, if the whole society is centered around Vishnu, if the whole society is Vaishnav society, then even activities which are meant for bodily welfare work, they become linked to bhakti because you're serving the Vaishnavas, serving them their bodily needs. So, someone who has performed devotional service in previous lives, they are more likely to take to devotional service. That's the general instance. As I gave the example of Bengal. But in Bengal, there's traditionally there is the Vaishnav community and the Shakta community. And those who come from a Shakta background, worshipping Kali mostly, Durga, Kali, they're less inclined to devotional service. There are cases of Shaktas who become Vaishnavas, and probably there are cases of Vaishnavas who become Shaktas. In Tamil Nadu, we'll find there traditionally there was a great divide between the Brahmana, Iyengar, Vaishnavas, and Aya, who are Smartha, Shaiva. And then apart from the Brahmanas, there are all the other people who are worshipping Murugan and the Vaishas, many of them were Sri Vaishnavas, some were Smartha line also, I presume. Still, both communities, yeah. Traditionally they wouldn't even marry each other, now they do. Galaino Ba, they write in the advertisements. You've seen the wedding advertisements? Kalaino Ba. Oh, that's within even within the Ramanuja Sampradaya, the Varigalai and Tengalai, they wouldn't marry. Now they put, now Kalaino Ba, they write. So it's so divided. They say they'll have caste, subcaste, sub-subcaste, oil pressing, and then tilly, they press the oil seeds. But this caste, they may have stopped pressing seeds 10 generations ago, but one is the one who presses castor seeds and the other one who presses mustard seeds, so they can't marry. And it goes on like that. So definitely one who is raised in that Vaishnav background, they may come out of contact with that, but they'll be more inclined to take it up, generally speaking. They have some background. I told the story just a few days ago of someone who's from Ramanuja family, his grandfather or father. He went to America, his father gave him a shalagram to worship. He didn't do it. He lost contact completely with all his culture, was eating beef, which is about as bad as you can get. But then somehow he thought let me once a week worship Shalagram. Even though he wasn't following anything else, he was still eating beef. Then he did two times, three times, then 7 days a week, then he stopped eating beef, then he met the ISKCON devotees and got initiated in ISKCON. So there's some touch, some Sukriti is there. But so someone who has that background is more expected to take to devotional service. And one fully cannot worship Krishna unless one comes to the pious position. Now just there in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Api chet sudur acharo bhajate mamananya bhag sadhur eva samantavya. He should be considered saintly. Someone who even engages in abominable activities. But that doesn't mean that he goes on doing that, because sinful activities are in themselves not a block to devotional service as aparadhas. Now that's another big topic, that's another seminar. But the they mar the consciousness, they pollute the consciousness, so that it's very difficult even to hear the message of Godhead. One can take to devotional service generally by hearing. One can hear about Krishna, then it vidyate hridaya grantish chidyante sarva sanshayaha. When one hears about Krishna, that awakens shravanadi shuddha chitte kareye udai. That awakens the dormant consciousness of Krishna. But someone whose consciousness is very dull, covered by sinful activities, they can't hear that. Sometimes the Vaishnavas have to shout loud or speak piercing words to try to pierce through the coverings. But generally people who are prepared, their consciousness is not so dull in the lower regions of Tamaguna, they can hear that. But sometimes someone who is very pious, they may not take to the Krishna consciousness, because piety itself can be a kind of contamination. One can become complacent. One becomes happy by performing sattvic activities, and it gets stuck at that level. So he's not inclined to hear about Krishna. But someone who's suffering very deeply, I've tried everything, okay, let me try Krishna consciousness. But for them it's going to be very difficult also, if they're accustomed to very sinful activities. And often people who do take to very sinful activities, they can't take to devotional service, because they're in the sense that, or they find it very difficult to do so, because they may be addicted to some intoxication. It becomes very difficult for them. But even they can do so by the mercy of the devotees. And there are many instances in our movement, especially from the previous generation of many of the hippies. They were addicted to various drugs. They were accustomed to illicit sex. They came out of that. So that's one reason why Srila Prabhupada's contribution is so extraordinary, because it's not expected that people from such a low background can take to devotional service. Generally, we would expect the more pious people to do so. But he was able to bestow that upon them, because some of them had some willingness to listen and to take to. Not all of them. There are many hippies who showed interest in Krishna consciousness, but then they were interested in so many other things also. They were interested in spiritual things, and they'd go to transcendental meditation and Guru Maharaji and Paramahamsa Yogananda and Zen and Alan Watts and all kinds of things. So it's not that all of them took to Krishna consciousness. Those who are the most fortunate, the most serious. So that's the general rule, that one may perform abominable activities, but that is not the symptom of a devotee. That is an aberration. That is something. It's not that a devotee is characterized by sinful activities. The point being made there is that someone, devotional service is so powerful that even after one has taken a devotional service, even one out of bad habit or whatever may perform some abominable activity, but he doesn't become disqualified from performing devotional service if he again takes to Krishna consciousness very seriously. Ananya bhag. He doesn't become disqualified like that. But it will be seen in devotees that they do cease all kshipram bhavati dharmatma. He very quickly comes to the proper position again, not that he goes on performing sinful activities. Devotional service is purifying so that someone doesn't desire to engage in sinful activities. What are sinful activities? They are manifestations of the desire to enjoy separately from Krishna. So a devotee doesn't cultivate such desires. So he stops that. So someone who has performed activities that are conducive to bhakti, he's more expected to take to bhakti. Whereas by the mercy of a devotee, even someone with no background of good qualifications, they can also be lifted to devotional service. A powerful devotee can uplift even people with no such background whatsoever. And he gives, as reportedly one devotee said to Srila Prabhupada, that, well, people who have pious backgrounds, they can take to devotional service. But we don't have any pious background. Prabhupada said, I've made your pious activities. By engaging devotees in devotional service, he, by getting them to chant Hare Krishna and take prasadam, by performing such activities, they, once chanting Hare Krishna with even a little sincerity, lifts them to the platform beyond so many lifetimes of mundane pious activities. Now regarding, there's not much time actually, but because I should finish now, but as it's the last day that I'm here, I should discuss this Krita Punya Punjaha, the cowherd boys who are playing with Krishna. It said that to play with Krishna, they must have been Krita Punya Punjaha. They must have performed heaps of pious activities. So, was that their qualification? Well, some of the cowherd boys were nitya siddhas, just like among the gopis. Some were eternal associates and some were coming to that position. Those who are in the position of eternal devotees, they never performed any pious or impious activities on the mundane platform. Or in the material, they had no contact with the material world. Those who are coming to the platform of nitya siddha, you know, whether one is sadhana siddha or kripa siddha, upon attaining siddhi, he's on the same platform as a nitya siddha. So, how did they get there? How do you go to Vrindavan? One has to perform extraordinarily exalted activities to be allowed into Krishna's pastimes. Jiva Goswami, commenting on this verse in his Preeti Sandarbhas, says about the cowherd boys who are playing with Krishna, they are the best among persons who have performed many pious deeds to please Sri Bhagavan. So he equates this punya that they have performed with activities performed to please Bhagavan. In other words, bhakti. So their punya here means they're the best among devotees because they could play with him in that way and please him in that way. Hare Krishna. I'll finish there for now. And I actually thought I'd finish this while I was here, but there's quite a bit more to do. Hare Krishna. Any question about this? No.
Those who understand I am a free soul, but are not accepting that I am a servant of Krishna, using middle consciousness.
One who accepts that I'm spiritual, but doesn't accept that I'm a servant of Krishna, is in material consciousness. Yeah, it's, we could say tatastha consciousness. It's not fully spiritual, it's not fully material. This will be discussed later. You can pick it up on the website. The different kinds of people who become liberated without serving Krishna. Yeah, it's quite a big discussion. Yeah, it's not fully spiritual consciousness. If one denies Krishna or avoids Krishna, then it'll lead him back to the material world, as in the Yenya Vindaksha verse, which you know. Is it? You know that verse? The persons become liberated by their own endeavor, But if they don't, if such persons don't worship Krishna, they fall down again to material activities. To answer it fully is quite, it's coming up in the discussion. So you'll have to stay tuned and it requires discussion. Yeah.
You mentioned that karmis and jnanis don't attain their siddhi, respective siddhis, unless there is a tinge of
bhakti. Then they can't, the karmis and jnanis can't attain their desired goals. That was discussed in some detail?
Yes.
Just 2 days ago, I believe.
Karmis, they are indirectly worshipping. And eventually they can take to jnana, and then if they have association of devotees, they can go to Krishna. But those jnanis who are ultimately ending up in Brahman effulgence.
The jnanis who end up in the Brahman effulgence.
They don't even recognize Krishna.
They don't recognize Krishna.
In what form bhakti is manifested in them?
In what form is bhakti manifested in them? In a very... very roundabout way, it would seem. They can't attain their goal without a touch of bhakti, but they at the same time they're very reluctant to pursue it any further. Then you had anything? No. All right. Hare Krishna.